Jesus. It must be crazy to come in here. No, no! Focus, David. Remember why you're here. If Hot Dave's Fun Summer Film Fest is going to be a success, we need a movie that'll put butts in the seats. Or make people want to rent tapes, I mean. Okay. Map here. And I take a left at Battlefield Earth, and past the Smokers and Water World. If you reach the sands of Ishtar, you have gone too far. Okay. If I followed the map correctly, I should be seeing it any time now. There it is. Alright, Dave. Let's do this. Nice. Easy.
Oh, shit!
Okay, to defeat Zoroth, shower him with the only thing he hates, the light of day. Shit. No, fuck! Where are the flares? What the fuck happened to the flares? No, oh god! Oh, that's it! I'm dead, I'm fucking dead! God, that was too close.
Oh. What are you doing in the box office bomb section, Dave? Nobody comes back here.
I don't need a lecture, Ryan. Something happened to my flares. I must have lost them back near Howard the Duck.
Okay, why didn't you just turn the lights on?
Well, you see, the map set... You know what? It doesn't even matter. The only thing it does is that we now have the perfect movie for Hot Dave's Fun Summer Film Fest.
Really? From here?
Oh, yes. Batten down the hatches, Mr. Ryan, because we have our heading. Today, we set sail for Cutthroat Island.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Tape is ancient. Hope it still plays.
So, let me get this straight, Dave. Your big plan to get people into the store for the Fun Summer Film Fest...
Hot Dave's Fun Summer Film Fest, Michael.
Right. Hot Dave's Fun Summer Film Fest. Your big plan to bring in customers is to screen one of the biggest box office bombs of all time? Is this some kind of the producer's thing? Are you hoping to lose business?
No, Mike, this isn't the producers. And I'm telling you, people will flock to rent this movie. You'll see.
What makes you so convinced?
Are you kidding me? Just look at this cover art. That's Drew Struzan, baby. No one can pass up a Struzan.
He's right. I'd watch any movie that had a Drew Struzan poster, no matter how shitty it is.
Oh, hey, Jackie. I figured you would have made your way back into the air ducts by now.
Sadly, no. The stench from all that Hot Dave's piping hot spicy chili has built up in the air vents.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Jackie. But thank you for getting the name right.
Don't mention it, Dave.
So, how long are you going to be down here?
It's pretty powerful stuff. In fact, it's almost otherworldly in its vileness, so it's going to take a while for it to fully dissipate. I guess it looks like I'm going to have to endure this film festival thing you guys have going on.
Ooh, it's about to start. Come on, guys, gather around.
Oh, God, this is gonna be a long summer.
We set sail for Cutthroat Island!
Put your backs into it.
Why don't you row?
Why don't you swim?
We can't leave yet, Captain. We haven't put enough food on board.
We need less mouths.
I really think that from now on we should be partners. 50-50.
60-40.
Come to seek my treasure, have you?
Let's finish this.
Okay, that was Cutthroat Island, and I think that that movie is very deserved. I may be laying my cards a little on the table a little early, but I think that movie is deserving of the $147 million it lost with inflation.
It's not a good movie,
no.
One would say, and it sure was bad for multiple careers and an entire studio.
And a marriage.
And a marriage.
And a genre.
And a genre.
And a genre.
Wow. All right. Well,
we can confirm they did make movies after this, right? This didn't stop
All of the things that we know as
movies that existed after
Cutthroat Island, they are legally, technically something else, much in the way that certain... like cheese can't legally call itself cheese, you know?
Right, oh, right. It's a cheese-like product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ripple effect of Cutthroat Island. I can't wait to discuss that. All right, well,
it's huge.
Before we get too deep into it, there's a lot to unpack. There's a lot to unpack with this movie. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by Ryan.
Hello.
Mike.
Ahoy, matey.
Oh, yeah.
Arr, I forgot. Should have done like a mayor.
And Captain Jackie.
That was a lovely shop. I really must go back when I have time. Oh, this movie makes me so sad for Gina Davis, who is an incredibly like charismatic, funny, just like charming performer, and this movie just sucks all of that away from her.
Probably almost killed her too. She did a lot of her own stunts.
Yeah, and because it was a badly made movie from top to bottom, that didn't always work.
Yeah, and a lot of the production, like, it seems like there was a lot of, like, stuff going on. Like, fires were being lit that weren't supposed to. At some point, there was raw sewage that got into the tank where they were supposed to be swimming.
Seems bad.
You know, I actually, before we get into the movie, because I have a feeling that we're probably going to end up discussing more of the production in the movie than the movie itself. I feel like this Cutthroat Island could be a contender for one of those movies where you could make a movie about the making of the movie and it would be 10 times better than the movie itself.
Yes.
Yeah. This
and
movie
I don't
a
want a
darkness.
Documentary. I want like a fiction, a fun, like...
That could be
well,
fun.
It probably wouldn't be that... The story wouldn't necessarily be fun.
Well, they kind of. I feel like the movie doesn't really have any kind of cultural impact or something, you know? Like, I think... Like, I feel like this is something, like, why didn't I see this? Like, we were talking about it while we were watching it, how much we were like, it made us want to watch Mask of Zorro and Pirates of the Caribbean. And,
really makes you appreciate those movies.
Yeah, and even, like, Waterworld was, like, better than this in a weird way to me. But I'm, like, thinking, like, all those movies that came out around this time, and I'm like, why wasn't this one? Like, I loved Hook, and it was a few years before this. Like, why didn't I see this? I had no idea. Only thing I knew was I got it mixed up with The Princess Bride because I thought Matthew Modine was his name?
Ellen. For years, I thought, looking at the poster for this movie, I'm like, oh, Cary Elwes is in that Cary Elwes movie.
Yeah,
it looks like Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I'm sure, intentional. They were like, who is like a handsome, you know, recent swashbuckler from a beloved, wonderful movie?
Yeah,
well, and we can.
It was supposed to be Michael Douglas. He was.
Well,
he was
it was
going
supposed
to be
a lot of people, Dave. I mean, talking about the production. This is just reading from the Chattopedia. I'm gonna list off everyone who they basically went down the line from Michael Douglas and ended up with Matthew Modine. And in between that, the people who turned it down were Tom Cruise, Keanu Reeves, Russell Crowe, Liam Neeson, Jeff Bridges, Ralph Fiennes, Charlie Sheen, Michael Keaton, Tim Robbins, Sheen. Daniel Day-Lewis, who I have to imagine was a late Hail Mary.
Yeah.
We get Dan?
Gabriel Byrne all turned that role down. And then they got
Modine. Yeah.
And Modine is one of those actors where, like, I know he's been in a million things. I know I've seen him act before, but I can't picture his face.
What is he known for Ben in?
Probably his biggest movie or his most critically acclaimed movie would be Full Metal Jacket. He was the main character in that.
Okay.
And hasn't he done like a ton of TV too, where it's like, of course I'm sure I've seen him in something. But like, gun to my head, I'm picturing Cary Elwes in the Princess Bride.
Yeah, I think it's like, is this weird? Because I remember seeing the cover but never thought 2 seconds of it. Like, I thought maybe it was something else, and I was surprised I never saw it.
It's also like such a stylized poster that you're like, you know, it's kind of hazy. You're like, yeah, that's it's what's his face.
Yeah, like I don't think it played on TV, and that's maybe part of it. Like, why didn't I catch this at some point? And I think
I
just
never remember seeing it on TV.
Me neither. And so I feel like it feels like a movie that was it wasn't clever enough to be on TV, I guess, or something, or or it was just so like on the bottom of the barrel that it didn't even make it that far. Like, it's not never been a bargain bin. They probably don't re-release it on Blu-ray too often. You know, it's.
I mean, when
I don't think it has fans.
A
I don't
studio
think
sinker like. I don't think anyone wants to bring up that memory when trying to be like, could we sell this? I don't want to look at it.
It might have just been like other things like Waterworld, like took away all of its like big flop steam that it has. Like, it's not even like Ishtar level, you know, it's like, what the hell? It's just, I don't know.
I never heard of it until you picked it, Dave. And I'm wondering if you had seen it before, what you knew about it.
I knew it was a big flop. I knew it destroyed the studio. This came from Carl Cole Pictures, the studio that brought us Terminator 2, the Rambo movies,
Total Recall,
Cliffhanger, Basic Instinct, huge hits.
Basically the Paul Verhoeven career,
kind
right?
The American Verhoevens until the other less than critically successful and commercially successful Showgirls.
Well, that was much later. That was a couple of years, or I think it might have been the same year, but that wasn't produced by Carlco. But they kind of got into big action movies, and because they were technically an independent studio, it kind of just, you know.
It sounded like when I was reading is that they were just spending money they didn't have, even though they had big hits. And so, like, they were paying, you know, Arnold $20 million or whatever it was, you know, and just.
And that was, in reading about this, they. When they were making this, they also had in production a Paul Verhoeven movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger called Crusade that they had pumped millions of dollars in but canceled so they could finance this. They put all their eggs in this basket, which is a bummer. Like, maybe that movie wouldn't have been good, but you always wonder what could have been. And, like, a 1995 movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger from Paul Verhoeven called Crusade sounds cool.
Like,
that sounds like a great movie lost to time.
Yeah, and with all so I had all that in mind when I picked this. And also, like, summer movie, I'm just like, honestly, like, the thought that came through my mind was, it's time. It's finally time to discover if Cutthroat Island, well, it's because it is a great
finally
looking,
time to read the scalp map of my dad.
Yeah, it is a great looking poster. Arguably, one of the best things about the movie is its poster. I believe it's Drew Struzan, right? Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's a Drew Struzan movie, and it's just like. Drew Struzan just don't lend his name to anybody, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he kind of does.
Well, he kind of does. But it was the poster, and it was one of those movies where I would always see it on the shelf at the video store back in the day, but I never rented it. But I was always kind of fascinated with it because it is such a great poster, a great little cover. And also, there was, like I said, there was the knowledge that it was this box office flop, and it killed any hope of a pirate movie until 2003 when Pirates of the Caribbean came out. So it was that fascination. It also fit our summer movie criteria.
It did have a beach.
And we thought it looks like the beach. Yeah.
There's a beach that looks like the beach. And apparently some of this was filmed in Thailand.
Yeah.
I wonder. You
know? When that scene happened, you guys are there. I jumped out of my seat. I'm like, it's all happening again. We're back
to
the beach.
You had the Leo Point gif going, you know, in real life.
Yeah, seriously, we were like, it looked exactly the same.
The beach.
It was the beach pre-CGI rock inserted. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
It's the beach, but it's open. And a ship can come right exactly. on through.
Back in the 1600s, that rock wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was with all that I wanted to watch this. I wanted to give it a chance. And unfortunately, it is as bad as its reputation would suggest.
It's a shame. Yeah. Like, when we were watching this, the first 15 minutes or so, I'm like, all right. Like, there's stuff
I
falling
lost
off.
Within 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it
was quick.
You can see it's expensive. It looks expensive. The practical effects are cool, but then it starts to dawn on you that, like, I have no idea what is going on. And like, I kind of do, I guess, but, like, it's not good. Like, there's no characters. And it really ends up feeling like a stage show at amusement park.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you're watching the Water World show.
You're seeing like a very well done, like afternoon pirate show featuring like some, you know, energetic.
We were saying it's like the equivalent of the Treasure Island Vegas show.
That's exactly what it felt like. Yeah,
the boat's firing after,
like where you don't see the characters really, but there's like a couple of people you recognize that have like their pre-recorded lines to go like aha, and they, you know.
What was going... Okay, so you mentioned... all right, so Ryan, you said you were lost 5 minutes in.
Well,
so
we were kind of like... I don't know, but...
What was going through everyone's heads? I'm going to start with you, Ryan. When we get we're 5 minutes in, we get the introduction of our main character, played by Gina Davis, Captain Morgan.
Which I think is a fun idea for a character. It's great, like her running a whole pirate ship.
What ran through your head when she said, I took your balls?
Oh, yeah, we all kind of like... You know, we're like, oh, yeah, we're back. Oh. We're back on board, baby.
She said balls.
You are heartless, Lieutenant. My apologies, Senorita. But you are right. I thought it was much more amusing this way also, since I knew that you knew. By the way, that won't work. See, I took your balls.
Yeah, we were kind of saying, like, it's just like, I was, the whole time I was thinking while I'm watching it, because there's, like, interesting, fun stuff and some cool shots, and we were just like, damn, like, people, like, that can make a movie like this work, like, Verbinski, or I was thinking, like, James Cameron, or, like, with, like, an Avatar or something, and I was just like, it's nuts that those movies work, like, the swashbucklers, or, like, you know, people don't like Hook, but, like, that movie works for me, and it's, like, nuts. Well,
I think one issue, at least with this opening scene, and here's the thing, like when the movie first starts and you get the map and the title, Cutthroat Island, and the music in this movie is the one really good thing about it, I think. Like I was immediately in the first 10 seconds.
At
I was
first.
Like, whoa. Yeah. At first. Like literally the first 10 seconds. I'm like, this is great. Like I thought it looked cool with the map and zooming in. I was like, this is awesome. And then it cuts to the scene that feels like It feels like we missed the first part of this scene, or like there was another scene.
A lot of that,
the introduction of Captain Morgan, because it feels like we're stepping into this is like the punchline, essentially. We're walking in on the punchline of a joke. Like, we didn't see the setup with her meeting him we didn't get like the Ocean's 11 type, I'm going to pick that guy, and then I'm going to, like, you know, this. We missed the setup.
And the whole movie is edited really weird, and I wonder if it's like, it feels like there's stuff missing.
Yeah,
and
there were a lot of things that felt like there's scenes on the cutting room floor that they...
It reminded me of stories you hear about the making of Fury Road, where like George Miller was, because it was such a big spectacle and with like real stuff, which in some ways this was, and they filmed so much, and like Tom Hardy, I think, was like, there's no way this is going to be a movie. And I think you see some of that here, where like they probably have so much footage and all this like elaborate stuff, and I think they had some difficulty putting it coherently together.
Yeah, and also it's not good footage of like a good movie.
I was reading that apparently like Rennie, they were like changing the script as they went, and Rennie Harlan was not like, apparently he had to spend like, they were so over budget that
Rennie Harlan sunk his own money into it.
Yeah, for a redraft, for a new draft, and like he wasn't happy with the sets they were building. He's like, this doesn't look right. And like he said, like there
he
is
like
a
fired a
this...
bunch of people too, of like director of photography and stuff, or like cinematographers and stuff.
That wasn't a case of having to fire the guy. That guy got injured. He broke his leg because he was on a crane. He fell off.
Oh, even better.
A new cinematographer for the movie. So this movie is a disaster.
I definitely felt bad watching this movie for everyone involved, because it seemed like they were trying really hard. And like, I don't know.
Well,
it just wasn't working.
I disagree. I remember reading the bit about the guy who got injured that you mentioned, Dave. But here's the thing that I was remembering, talking about the like various delays that happened during shooting, including this quote: when Harlan fired the chief camera operator following a dispute that's not elaborated on, more than 24 crew members quit. So seems like this guy, among many other things, not great to work with, probably not that nice. And considering that Gina Davis, his wife, divorced him just a few years after this, with this detail that she divorced him the day after her personal assistant gave birth to a child fathered by Harlan.
Oh, God.
He wasn't a great husband either. What I'm saying is, fuck this guy.
Wow. The director of Cliffhanger? Really?
I know.
Die Hard 2?
You just can't believe it. And that's what the whole first scene makes me think a lot of, is it's so textbook, like, you know, strong female character written by a man, where it doesn't actually give a shit about Morgan or like giving Gina Davis like some actual like shit to do. It's some guy who wanted to turn this already successful actor into an action star. And he's putting her in, like, he's just giving her all the wrong tools. And she, you know, didn't have a lot to work with.
Supposedly required the actors, I say required the actors, to do their stunts whenever possible. So, and apparently that's that big moment, one of the big set pieces in the movie, when they're in that carriage chase. And it's like a video game moment where she's like, oh shit, like it's low clearance, I gotta jump through this, you know, upper area and like run to like on the top and then jump down onto the carriage on the other side. Like, apparently she did that for real. And she, like, I don't know if it was a timing issue or what, but like she fell early or something and went under, I guess, under the carriage or something like that and got injured. Fuck. It's just like,
oh God, this is why people have stunt
movies.
Like,
this is
why stunt
people
in movies. People
exist.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that whole thing, and you can't even barely see her face when she jumps out of the window. It's like, that could have easily been a stunt person.
Yeah.
But, and that's the thing, like, all these problems with, like, people getting injured and leaving, and you gotta do your own stunts. And again, it's like, it's in service of what feels like a Treasure Island style, like you mentioned, production at Vegas or something. Like, I'll grant the movie this. There are a lot of explosions, and they are very large.
They're very kind of cool.
Someone got burned.
That boat blowing up, wasn't it cool?
It was good. Yeah. Cannon sounds. The Foley work is good.
But
were
again,
there like some
it's
miniatures
just,
at some point that we were admiring?
Yeah.
It just feels it's ironic. It's so weird. It simultaneously looks so expensive and feels so cheap to me.
Yeah.
Like, it just, yeah, I think the Vegas analogy is, like, the perfect thing.
It almost feels to me like it would be something that, like, a VFX studio would put together and, like, shop around to studios being like, look at what we can do with effects. Like, yeah, whatever. Like, the story's just placeholder. But the... It's like the only thing
that's just a showcase. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an excuse for these effects, which I, you know, you'd think would be enough. Like the explosions are there, but
it's like people are too far away. Like there's not really the editing and the energy to like make you like, whoa, about it, in my opinion, a little bit. Like there's a couple moments that are pretty good, but with those stunts and effects, but it's almost like, all I could think about during the whole thing is like what two actors would have made this movie better, was kind of what I was thinking about, just cause I was like, even if like the script is so kind of dry, there's not a lot going on. If they weren't just popping off the screen, they just seemed like they were lost in this, you know, sea, those
lost
actors, they were lost at sea. These guys,
yeah,
these
one of the, Gina Davis, one of the people who turned it down was Jeff Bridges. I think he would be, especially like 1995, Jeff Bridges seems like that would be a fun choice.
Yeah.
I think that's another big, among the litany of issues of this movie, I think that's a big one. I didn't feel any chemistry between Matthew Modine and Gina Davis. I'm sure the script isn't helping anything. Like none of these characters feel three-dimensional to me or anything like that. Not that I'm necessarily expecting a pirate movie to be like, you know, really deep necessarily, but
there's nothing for you to really like, you know.
We were talking about
likeable characters, really.
Yeah, I have the note that I wrote after the fact, but that Modine is arguably like my least favorite part of the movie. He's not a gentleman thief so much as a fuckboy thief.
Yeah,
and it's like I don't want any of this. But we were talking about how, like, you know, in the pirate genre dialogue, comparing like this stinker to the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which is like genuinely like fun and dramatic and bombastic and launched an unholy, you know, saga afterwards. But
it's the Curse of the Black Pearl.
That is the Curse of the Black Pearl, and how that story is not, you know, the most like complicated thing on earth, and that the characters that we follow aren't necessarily like, you know, it's not Shakespeare here, but they're effective, and you have the actual like, not that Gina Davis doesn't have like star quality, but she's such a bad fit for that whole project compared to a Johnny Depp doing a like rock star scumbag pirate, and Keira Knightley, who's at like her, you know, shining eyed, putting her chin up, kind of all of that, and Orlando Bloom, who is pretty. And he does what he does, and we love him for it.
I gotta wonder how much of that comes down to the direction, because Gore Verbinski, this is a chaotic production, and so you gotta figure. I'd imagine there's all these problems going on. Rennie Harlan's probably just like, just fucking do it.
Rennie Harlan's probably being a huge asshole.
I imagine Gore Verbinski, on the other hand, on Pirates of the Caribbean, just having a much more better reign. They have a lot more money. I gotta imagine money probably wasn't an issue on Pirates of the Caribbean. It was kind of a risk that movie was a risk. It's like, we're doing a pirate movie.
And it's a PG. I think it was like Disney's first PG-13 in a long time too.
I can sympathize too with the pressure that the director of this movie would be under, that knowing like Gore Verbinski making Pirates of the Caribbean is like, okay, it's a huge budget. We're taking a stab out of the dark, but like, if I fail, Disney's not going under, you know?
Exactly.
And just like the knowledge of like, everything is riding on this movie, Mr. Harlan. And like, that,
he had to tell Paul Verhoeven he couldn't make his movie.
I can imagine
put it all on
him.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Arnold's not making this. We canned the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Remember Terminator 2 that just came out? Like,
I thought I was reading that was it. Showgirls was part of their run, but they sold it off to pay for this. I thought, and then the Arnold one was something else. I think that's what I was reading, unless
now,
I'm getting.
Well, from the Chattopedia, to fund the endeavor, the cash-starred company canceled its only other project, Crusade, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, losing $13 million in the process, but freeing up additional money for Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, and then you keep going, and then I think it says about Showgirls they or something like.
Well, it sold an interest in Showgirls interest. And Stargate, oh, okay. So I guess technically they still had it, but it you know they didn't get as much money out of it.
Yeah,
I think not to put it all on Harlan, but I think his awful fucking instincts are behind a lot of why this movie sucks shit, because he. Again, was the one who pushed for Geena Davis to be cast because he wanted to turn her into an action adventure star, and that by the time Michael Douglas, you know, who was going to play Shaw, left because
partly because of Geena Davis, right?
Well, it was partly because Harlan wanted to beef up the Geena Davis role and didn't really give a shit about the Shaw role, which didn't work out for anybody involved. But by the time Douglas quit. Geena Davis also did not want to be in this. She wanted to quit as well, but she was more contractually tied up with it. So she didn't want to be there, and it seems like no one else wanted to be there, except for Harlan, who again sunk his own like $1 million into this.
You know,
for what?
You guys mentioned, as we're talking about the stars, you guys mentioned who would have been better. I think this movie would have been better if it had been made maybe 5 years or so earlier. With Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas.
Well, because they we had were talking that about that.
They because had it's that Romancing the Stone. Yeah,
yeah, because they were good in Romancing the Stone, and this could have been like a cool, like, this could have been like their next, you know,
yeah.
collaboration.
Well, they did
together,
do the other
like
one.
Tom Cruise, Helen,
the Jewel.
Tom Hanks, Helen Hunt.
Tom Cruise and Helen Hunt.
What was the Romancing the Stone sequel?
That was Jewel of the Nile. That was a
yep.
bomb.
Well, this is what we're saying because I saw Romancing the Stone for the first time not too long ago, and I feel like that one is sort of like that was another one where I just always saw the cover and never saw it, and I watched it and I liked it a lot, and it feels like not your the most insane concept, you know, it's kind of an Indiana Jones modern day sort of thing, but they're both great, both actors in that movie that they elevate the movie up. And that was at a point that was a thing that, you know, you kind of needed for something like this, unless it just was fucking good, you know, like stars still sold movies, you know.
I honestly, as we were watching this and I had the Chattopedia up on my little mobile device, just kind of because the movie wasn't necessarily engaging. So I was kind of looking at the trivia as we're watching it. And I'm like, God, for one thing, I was thinking,
Dave,
why
do you remember
I...
at what point, like I was saying when the movie first started, it was about 15 minutes in where I was like, oh, no. Do you remember like how long you gave this movie a shot before you realized it wasn't going to be good?
Maybe like 30, 40 minutes.
That's even pretty generous.
Well, I don't know. It's just, well, it's not good when you're watching a movie thinking we could have watched something else. Like I was thinking like, why didn't I choose Romancing the Stone? That would have been perfect. But
well, it's kind of nice.
Mask of Zorro, you brought up Mask of Zorro. I thought like, you know, like I'd rather be watching.
We could watch
that.
Mask of Zorro again.
We just rewatched Mask
of Zorro. We could just re-review Mask of Zorro.
Well, you know what?
Yeah, it's still
a good,
really
right? good movie.
Still hot. Everyone in this movie hot. Yeah.
It's still hot and cool.
I mean, I don't know. It's sort of like you want to see something like this and realize like, oh, this was great. Like, I mean, it didn't blow me away, but at least like this, you like to try to find some good in some of these old bombs that happened and forgotten movies and realize like, oh, you ever seen this? It was a huge bomb, but it's actually really good. And yeah, it was just it wasn't even like it's hard to even point out like bad moments or bad things. It's just sort of everything kind of falls flat on it, that it's just like there's nothing really to it. That's kind of what sucks about it, really.
There's kind of okay, so
I must come back here to shop when I have more time.
That was good.
That was terrible.
That was bad. That was like so bad it's good.
I can
maybe.
Only imagine Geena Davis had already been run over at this point, and she's so scared of
that
fucking up the stunt
delivery.
Again that she's just like, okay, it worked, here's my line.
At least there's some levity.
He was dripping with disdain for that line, I feel like.
It was at least
or just like checked out.
I must visit that shop again when I have more time.
There is one actor in this movie who is not checked out, and I think he is the MVP of this movie. And he's also done this in other really terrible movies where the movie itself is terrible, but he's giving it his all. Frank Langella as the villain.
He's
going full cheese ball.
Yes, he commits. There is a moment in this movie,
but not enough. I feel like, you know, he is
not enough to save it, but he's doing it.
Uncle Dog is doing his best.
Play the clip. It's the clip. where he goes, the Morgan!
Morgan! Bitch stole my map! Find it! On your own, dick!
It's just like that felt a little bit, that line felt a little too 90s to me. It didn't feel like something a pirate would say, like, that bitch stole my map. I'm like, what? That's seemed out of place. But the fact that he commits it all and just goes, Morgan, I was enjoying Frank Langella's performance as bad as the movie was.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I forgot that her name was Morgan in the movie, so like, what is it? I'm like, who's he yelling about? Like, I just
who's Morgan?
Who's Morgan?
Morgan Davis?
Captain Morgan? They got booze? They got...
It's so funny looking at the poster between Cutthroat Island and Pirates of the Caribbean, and I would say the better looking movie, it looks like Cutthroat Island.
From the poster? Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts. I'm like, wow. The other one looks like a porn parody.
Fun class.
And the ironic part is that this feels like the porn movie without the porn. Like, it's just like, yeah. I don't know.
There was like that moment when she got shot, when I called out loud. It was like, oh, there's going to be a sexy bullet removing scene later. And then like 15, 20 minutes on, there was
sexy bullet removal.
But well, like, you get Malcolm there was
in
no
the middle's brother walk in.
And Malcolm in the
Francis.
Middle's brother's there, Francis. But yeah, it's a like sexy scene with absolutely no like sexual chemistry or intrigue between the characters. And again, it's just like, oh, well, here it is.
You know the part of the movie where I was like, nail in the coffin, like this movie is not good. They find the treasure and it's treasure. It's just treasure. I've seen movies and whenever you have like, there's like the long hunt for the treasure, it can't just be like treasure.
A box of gold.
Yeah, it's gotta be something more exciting. Like it's not there or the treasure's like, you know, the Jesus's cup isn't the really fancy looking cup. It's the old busted one.
There's a genie.
The presentation was lacking. Like, honestly, it reminded me the treasure, the mystical treasure of Cutthroat Island. It's like they got to go, like, rappel down, and it's in a cave, like, off the cliffside or something. And it reminded me of the moment from Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows where, like, it looked just like the area where they get the first Horcrux. It's just like a pool, and there's, like, a little, like, little tiny island in the center.
Just some something. Plastic gold coins.
Plastic
and
gold
pile.
Coins. And it reminded me of that. It was like the same type of setup. And it's like, there's no... With a moment like that, you have to build it up. Like, with the lighting or something. Like, the lighting. Like
yeah.
The entire room is gold, you know.
If it's going
like
to be
that.
Treasure, it's got to be more opulent than this.
It
like,
literally just looked like someone dumped in there. Just bloop, you know. Like they
and it was just such a like, oh, like, this story is just nothing. Like,
yeah.
It kind of makes you it makes you sad because you're like, oh, you guys did all that for this.
Making movies are hard.
It's just making like... movies are hard. But don't you wish you
especially
made,
this movie.
Don't
I mean,
you
it,
wish
it
made
seems
a better
hard.
One?
It clearly was hard.
It's like they couldn't. I mean, I'm not usually all about like terrible CGI, but this is the moment where it's like. It's like the National Treasure moment when they open up the door and it's like literally the entire room from floor to ceiling, like wall to wall, is just gold.
Yeah, and doesn't it like it dramatically like the fires light in that movie, if I remember correctly,
something
like,
that,
like
yeah.
slowly lighting up the room.
In this, they just walk in and it's almost like they have like one like flat light straight down onto the treasure, and it's just someone discarded it there, like,
or like
know,
just some the mummy
clearly
a few
plastic
years later
looking,
when
boring.
They go. To like the tomb and the mummy, if you like, was it 4 years later? Because I was 99, I think. So,
and there's
like a crazy pathway. It looks like that they get like that they're walking on with treasure on both sides and all kinds of cool stuff. And that has characters
like
too, yeah. That are
yeah,
to pop
I, again,
out.
I feel like just this scene being lit better would have made it a little more like, oh, you know what I mean. But it's seriously just one light, straight down on the treasure, and it literally looks like they dumped the treasure in a giant toilet.
This is all for, and when that doesn't work, the winds were not blowing that hard, but they really came out of the stop hitting the sails after that for me. Like I was just like, oh, okay.
I couldn't care either.
I will be frank, and we were drinking various grog and such on the ship.
I think you had some live wire.
Oh, some of that. while we were watching this, but I was fully asleep for the last third, I want to say.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe a little bit more.
Did you see the treasure?
No, I didn't.
Okay. You missed nothing.
That's kind of the vibe I got.
You did miss the best scene of the movie. There is one I want to highlight. There's at least one very good moment. It's the dramatic finale when Gina Davis is like on the floor of the bad guy's ship and lights a cannonball at the Frank Langella guy. And it's so cartoony because like the cannonball hits his stomach and instead like it would just rip through his stomach and it would be horrific. But instead it like pushes him back. And he busts through the wall and like busts through several walls of the ship.
Okay, that's
which, like, the physics of this don't make any sense.
I'm not mad at that.
And it's not going through him. Like he's just like whoa, like flying through multiple walls, busts out of the ship, and then it just cuts. Talking about the weird editing, I think then it just cuts to them on top of the ship, our heroes, and they jump off, and then the whole ship explodes.
Yeah, that's what ships do.
In the biggest explosion ever.
Pirate ship does.
It is a big explosion.
It was gigantic. Like, well, you could tell, like, and this could be a testament to, like, some movie making, believe it or not, some good movie making. But as I watched it, I'm like, that didn't look like a miniature. Like, it's like all the like, individual boards that, like, flumed out, like, that looked real.
It really didn't. I mean, I'd believe it, I guess. I've been known to get this, like, think things are real that are not real in movies.
The movies.
Remember on Angel's Wings, there was like some.
Oh yeah,
those flying scenes. I mean, it's crazy.
How'd they do
they
that?
Just like flew the plane there. So yeah, I mean, maybe it was a miniature, but it looked real for sure. And it was one of those. It's one of those effects where the explosion looks so big. I was kind of like, oh geez, is this like bigger than they
miniature.
Like? Is everyone okay? Like,
it reminded me of the explosion from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where they literally did blow up the bridge in that sequence, and the explosion was so big you could literally see like the shockwave go out. And it was one of those explosions where you hear about it, you're like, yeah, it blew like windows from like 3 miles away. It blew windows out, shit like that. Like it reminded me of those types of explosions. And just once again, I'm just like, someone probably got hurt.
Back in the day when you could really destroy something.
And it was all for this.
And it was for this.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah. That is
box quote for me on this is just, it's a shame.
Still, there was the moment when Gina Davis revealed like a tri knife. You remember that? You know, it like split out like that. It had like three knives in one.
Yeah.
She had kind of a nice sword fight toward the end, you know? That was kind of cool.
It gets back to like, welcome to Universal Studios production of Cutthroat Island. Like, it's like they're going to fight up on the top of the sails. You know, like we're moving the fight up there. It felt like the Waterworld attraction.
Yeah.
And that climax, those boats are just parked next to each other for a while, just hammering out those cannons.
Oh, yeah.
Reminded me of Treasure Island and you too, Ryan, is like, I think you had mentioned, like, does this ever,
yeah,
like, did this ever happen?
Well, I was thinking, because in movies, like, how we're presented, like, ship battles and pirate movies is two ships next to each other blowing the hell out of each other with their cannons. And I was thinking, like, is there, like, historical evidence that this is what happened? Because, like, wouldn't, like, one ship just blow away the other one and it's done? Like, why would
it? Yeah, like, I could see it if they're far away, but they're right next to each other.
And I'm wondering, like, did they ever even get close enough to be that close to each other where you could board somebody by swinging on a rope and going like,
ha ha, ha ha.
And I'm just saying, like, that's fun. I love it. I'm not saying don't do that. You know, I'm just saying, like, I'm just curious. Like, we gotta get like a historian on the show and ask him. You know, But, you know, speaking of the Waterworld stunt show, I think they're still doing that in the in Sector 6 or something, you know, because that, show still is going through, you know.
And it's still awesome. It's still awesome.
It still rocks. It's still going on to this day, even
this
though.
I feel like this movie could have been salvaged if there was like another. You know what? It would have been awesome if Six Flags bought the rights to Cutthroat Island and made their own stunt show, the Cutthroat Island Stunt Show. Like, maybe they could have salvaged this movie a little bit, the memory of this movie. Because, as you know, Waterworld was also kind of a flop. I mean, I think ultimately in the end it made its money back, believe it or not.
Yeah, but kind of a critical flop a little bit too, yeah.
Yeah, Waterworld's looked upon as like this. Oh, it's just a flop, but... The Waterworld stunt show is still going on.
People and it probably like made that, stunt show. That show probably made more money than the movie.
Probably. Yeah. You know, and so I feel like the fate of this movie could have been, or the reputation of Cutthroat Island could have been like, you know, salvaged if it had become a stunt show, because the end of this movie feels like a stunt show.
It feels like, again, just with like the total collapse of the studio and the genre, like they didn't even want to salvage it. They just wanted to like brush it under the rug and pretend that no one ever did this.
And well, the thing is too, like with the Waterworld stunt show, even though that movie's it's kind of a mess, but there's memorable stuff in that movie, and there's a couple of memorable characters.
Everyone remembers drinking the pee.
They drink the pee. You remember the fish guy. You remember, what's his name? It's the villain with the eye patch.
Everyone remembers what's his name.
Famous villain. What's his name with the eye patch?
Yeah, I was just saying, like, there's things that stick out to you in that movie where this, like, even if they had a stunt show, it would just be the basic vanilla pirate show, you know?
Like,
there's nothing.
That's all you need, though. You don't really. That's what I feel like this movie. Like, if you just, like, get rid of all of the so-called story with this movie, this could have just. This was. At its core, this movie is just a stunt show that you would see at, like, Universal Studios. And that's how I feel like it could have been salvaged if it was just a stunt show. But the problem is.
And Harlan was not involved.
Yeah. The problem is this particular stunt show already exists. It's over in Vegas called Treasure Island. So there's no saving this movie.
Yeah. And they're not going to rebrand the Treasure Island to Cutthroat Island.
No.
So.
No.
They're like, sorry, what? We're working with a like over 100-year-old, like. Property,
hey. Public domain, baby.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
You know, I mentioned an MVP earlier. There is also there are two MVPs in this movie: Frank Langella and the random violinist who is playing the theme as they run out. I don't remember what scene it is, but you guys remember this? Like, no. As they're running through the city, there's this like this violinist playing like the theme, like diegetic music or whatever it is. They just don't play. I'm just like, what the hell is that?
I thought you were gonna say the monkey.
Oh, yeah, the monkey.
Oh, the monkey's pretty good. Of course.
He did some great
acting. Gina had a monkey.
They got a monkey to salute. That's all I know.
There's a lot of good monkey on shoulder action.
Yeah, he was doing his good thing, you know. I wonder
if
it was...
There is more connection between her and the monkey than her and Matthew Modine.
Yeah, they have a tight bond.
There should have been, like, a good monkey and the villain should have had his own evil monkey with, like, an eye patch.
Oh, that could have been
got a dark colored vest,
and in the climax, then you have the scene where like the two monkeys are fighting, like little swords.
Yeah, yeah, there should be.
Jeez Louise, yeah. I'm trying to think of anything else.
I haven't mentioned this yet, but I think aside from everything else that this movie does wrong, this movie does commit a capital sin, and that is the slow-mo. The slow-mo in this movie is out of control. Like, every action scene is slow-mo. Almost every scene is slow-mo. Mm-hmm. This movie could... I'm not kidding when I say this. I bet you if you ran this movie through a program to reduce the amount of slow-mo in the movie, like adjust the timing, this movie probably would have been like 15 minutes shorter if not for the slow-mo. The slow-mo
is... That alone would...
Remember that there's like a slow-mo when they're like... Something I think there's a building exploding behind him with Gina and Matthew Modine and another character. And remember something like hit Modine in the head in slow-mo?
Yeah, there's definitely a moment where something like hits Modine in the head and it doesn't look like it was supposed to.
Yeah. Or at least his double or whoever, but it looked like it was probably him.
Probably
and,
him.
And it's like a kind of a wide shot. They could, they'd always have wide shots with these explosions and stuff. And so they're all kind of running with swords and just something hits him in the face. And then it cuts away and it's not like he's in the next scene like, oh, no. It just looks like a random piece of foam hit him in the face or something
but
like
he
that.
He was gone for 2 weeks after that scene. He had to get, this is another thing, they don't tell you this in the special features or the Chatopedia, but he had to get complete facial reconstruction surgery after that scene.
Dozens of actors did.
And that's just another
$20 million
off the budget. Oh my God. Added to the budget, we got to reconstruct Modine's face.
Jeez Louise.
The slow-mo was kind of my last note that I had. I'm like, the slow-mo was making me tune out. It was obnoxious, the use of slow-mo in this movie. And it got me thinking, I remember hearing James Cameron saying something about slow-mo. Ryan, maybe you only read about movies, so maybe you've heard about this. James Cameron was talking about, like, I only like to use slow-mo in action scenes to build the tension or something like that. He was saying how he used slow-mo.
I could see him using it more in like a scene where somebody's like watching another character or something like that. It's from their perspective or something.
Like it was, he said, like it should be used to build tension. It shouldn't be used to like, look how fucking cool this is. But you know,
unless it's really cool.
As I say that, I'm like, wait a minute. Slow-mo in James Cameron movies, like the fucking motorcycle driving off the thing.
That's true.
But that's really cool.
Hold on, James Cameron. There's a lot of slow-mo you use in action scenes. What the hell are you talking
about?
In fairness, though, his movies are better.
Yeah, I can't really think of times. But the thing is, he almost uses it or slow-mo there, but it's done in like a way that... It's not total super slow mo. It's almost like it is slowed down so you can see the explosion better. But
not a, like calling attention to itself kind of slow mo.
Yeah, it's like 60 frames a second and not like 120, basically.
You know, this might have been because I think a while back he did like one of those master class things.
I hear that's good. I hear that's actually like really well done. And people are like, you got to see James Cameron's masterclass. It's like, I learned like a shitload of stuff off it. And like, it's a surprise.
I mean, maybe it's something that Rennie Harlan can watch. The James Cameron masterclass in action filmmaking.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. What did he go on to do after this?
Rennie Harlan, yeah,
his Chatopedia picture is extremely douchey.
He is one of those guys, he kind of made it, he was, I think his first big movie was Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Like, they gave him that movie, and it ended up being, like, the highest grossing of the franchise at that point. He'd go on to, of course, make Die Hard 2, which is a big hit, Cliffhanger.
Oh, that's right, we did see he did
Before
Die
you
Hard
go,
2.
Go further, I have to, the table of contents, and this is a lot of Chatopedia in this episode, but the table of contents for his career is so telling. The contents are early career, breakthrough in the 1990s, just 2000s, 2010s, and move to China. Unproduced films. It really tells a story.
Well, to give him credit, that he did have some big movies. Nightmare 4 was big, Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger, and then he had Cutthroat Island. And then a year later, he did Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis again, which was actually kind of a success. Was it successful? No, it lost money again, but it kind of
it was
had,
a
like,
little
a
better
following.
Received, right?
That's one
received.
I remember. That would be on TV and in VHS,
yes.
I feel like.
That one was on TV a lot. And then a few years after that, he did Deep Blue Sea, which, as we all know, is the movie where, Samuel Jackson's giving that speech, and then out of nowhere he gets eaten by a shark, which is amazing.
Well, it's one of the best scenes ever. Yeah, that movie is pretty good. We should have watched Deep Blue Sea.
Maybe. We should have watched Deep Blue Sea.
Hey, connected to the beach. What is a beach?
Well, there's
no
beaches. They're on like a basically a sea lab in that one.
But it begins with like a bunch of horny teens on like a party boat. So if that doesn't scream summer, I don't know what else does. But after,
I've seen
that
too many times. Deep Blue Sea. I feel like
after Deep Blue Sea, pretty much like he did some movies, but none that were big. Like he did that Legend of Hercules movie, which came out I think around the same time as the other Hercules movie with The Rock.
Is that one? So this is the one without The Rock.
Yeah, It's the Hercules movie that doesn't star The Rock.
He did one of the Exorcist prequels, like the second one or the remade one. Do you remember that? How there was two Exorcist Beginnings?
It was retooled from a movie that had already been made called Dominion, prequel to The Exorcist, and this one's kind of like, we got to redo it. It's not actiony enough.
Dominion was a Paul Schrader movie, and then the thing is, so they redid it with The Exorcist: The Beginning with Rennie Harlan, and then eventually Dominion came out. Like, I remember we had both of them at Hollywood Video.
Yeah, it was weird. Rennie Harlan, man, as you said, Mike, his career, at least if you look at it, the table of contents on Chattopedia is interesting, to say the least. It's telling. He hit it big really early on, and then like Cuthbert Island just kind of discovered his career.
I see this, that in 1999 he was working on an action comedy called Nosebleed that was starring, so this is 1999. It was meant to star Jackie Chan as a window washer who foils a terrorist attack to destroy the World Trade Center. The film was delayed after changing studios to MGM in 2001. After the September 11 attacks, the plot was drastically rewritten and ultimately shelved.
That's rough for a lot of reasons.
Well, this is to kind of steal kind of a bit from another podcast, but I think it'd be fun. And according to the, Chattopedia, Cutthroat Island is the fifth biggest box office bomb on this list, adjusted for inflation.
Okay.
Can you guys guess the previous four? And they all came out after Cutthroat Island. That's one of the clues.
Wait, there's four movies that are bigger bombs.
That since Cutthroat Island. And this is adjusted for inflation box office bombs.
That's a good question.
And here's one. I got another clue is that one of them features an actor that we talked that is in a movie we talked a lot about on this episode.
So Cutthroat Island came out in 1995, and since 1995, there have been four movies that were even bigger bombs, and they all came out after Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, I think you could guess three of these. I think, or maybe two of them for sure. And then there's one of them. I'm like, oh wow, I totally forgot about that. That does exists. So
I'm gonna throw out. So I'm thinking of there was a lot of like after the Marvel success, there was a lot of like we're gonna start a whole cinematic universe that they like dumped a bunch of money in and didn't work. Like there was The Mummy, which is one, but I don't think that
made money though.
Yeah,
at least a little
Mummy.
Bit.
No, not The Mummy. Like
no, but even the Tom Cruise one that made some money.
I'm not even necessarily thinking that, but it's just like, were there other things along those like Golden Compass? What about Golden Compass?
Golden Compass
is that on
there?
That's
one of them.
No.
What?
All right. Well, I'm gonna pick the easy route since Mike set it up. Justice League, is that on there?
No.
Justice League made a lot of money.
Justice League made money though.
It made like $1 billion. It just didn't make as much money as they hoped.
Yeah.
I had a clue that.
Oh! Chronicles of Narnia?
No, that one did well. Maybe
Jupiter
Prince
Ascending.
Though. Ooh, that's a good guess.
That's a good guess, but that is probably. Let's see.
It definitely lost money, but it wasn't as big. It wasn't in the Cutthroat Island realm.
Okay. That's 23rd on the list. 23rd on the list.
23rd. You're looking for the top five, right?
This is
adjusted for inflation of loss.
Cutthroat is number
can
five.
You,
Cutthroat is number five.
Ryan,
yeah.
Can you give us number four just so we have maybe this will spark some ideas?
Let's say.
Just more clues, too, would help.
Let's say this is produced by somebody that made some of the biggest movies of the 2000s, a big trilogy, and then another trilogy that maybe
Peter Jackson, Peter Jackson.
Is it a
joint?
Hobbit?
No,
I bet the Hobbit made. But
is
what
it
was
the Lovely
in between?
Bones?
No, remember like movies that cost like $200 million. You know, like
was it King Kong?
No, I made money. You guys are all. You guys are totally. Oh, I thought this would be easier. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not that bright.
All right. So
it's gonna
I've
be
been
so
hitting the grog again.
Give us one.
All right. So the next one after Cutthroat Island is it lost $180 million adjusted for inflation. Came out in 2018, and that is our beloved Mortal Engines.
Oh Morty and G's.
That's a good.
Well, that was the Peter Jackson.
So forgettable. I forgot that it lost money.
Yeah, that's better the problem. Some of these are just like they're it's tough to remember these colossal failures because they usually failed for a reason.
God, compared to a Cutthroat Island, though, Mortal Engines is like a trip to fucking Disney World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Okay. Right. That's a good.
I think the next one, and this is one I forgot existed, but I think David will be able to guess this. And it adjusted for inflation, it lost $107 to $200 million. They don't know exactly.
What decade is this?
1999, I'll say.
Oh, 1999.
Any ideas, David? Before I give you another
clue.
Give
us more clues.
All right, this one is
maybe a genre?
A loose adaptation of the tale of Beowulf, inspired by a novel from a very famous novelist of the 90s that had a lot of movies.
Michael Crichton, maybe?
Oh, there you go. Was it Timeline?
Close, but no.
No? Oh.
It is Michael Crichton, Timescape. Though. Michael Crichton movie.
Oh, it's the 13th Warrior.
That's it, 13th Warrior, yeah.
Okay.
I have never heard of that movie.
You know, I've talked to Cody about that movie. I think he said that was good.
That's John McTiernan did that one. Speaking of the Die Hard, we talked a lot about
that's
him.
Die Hard, right?
Yeah. So that was
13th Warrior.
That might be a good one for the show.
Okay. So, okay. So that's number
four. That's number three. So here we go. So I'm gonna say the next one also starts with the. And it's also
starts with the.
Just for inflation, it came out in 2013. $178 million to $211 million lost.
The Red Tails?
No, Red Tails it cost like $2, that movie.
What's the genre?
13.
It is, I want to say that we talked a lot about somebody that stars in this movie and the director this episode.
Hmm.
Was it a Pirates sequel?
No, those all did pretty well.
It's not, but, you know... You're thinking in the right direction, you know.
The Lone Ranger?
Oh. The Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah. God.
Ding, ding, ding. A lot of canceled people in that movie.
He should have stuck to pirate movies, man.
Yeah. Shame.
All right. And number one, Cody would, you know, he'd be to bat for this one for sure.
He likes this movie?
It's a classic tale, probably the first comic book character.
Astro Boy.
No, was it Conan the Barbarian?
No, but close. Think that, but in space.
What?
The first?
How much did it lose?
It lost.
This seems like one of those clues.
$229 to $225 million.
And what year did this come out?
2012.
This isn't Alita Battle. No, it's not Alita Battle
no.
Angel.
No,
it's,
no.
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 No. No.
And it's in space?
And this is the biggest bomb. This is number one.
This is the biggest bomb of all time.
Bomb of all time. It's not Jupiter Ascending.
It also blank. Still is when it's not adjusted for inflation. So it still is.
Wait, does this have a the as well?
It doesn't, but no, it doesn't. No.
Okay, no the. Oh. Okay. Oh, John Carter.
John Carter. Ding, ding, ding.
John Carter, of course. That was a bomb. Yeah, that was a bomb that I remember. But I enjoy that movie. It's not perfect, mm-hmm. but I enjoy.
Be honest, that all. I mean, I haven't seen 13th Warrior. I don't think, but Lone Ranger's a little rough. But there's some enjoyable moments. But all those other movies on there are a lot better than this one. I think.
I would watch. I would gladly watch any of those other movies in Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
I haven't seen Lone Ranger, but I have to imagine I would like this just a hair over the Lone Ranger.
Now, Lone Rangers has a lot of weird shit going on in it.
Yeah. At least Lone Ranger is like photographed. It's a good looking movie. The sequence at the end has some fun. If you haven't seen Lone Ranger, there's like a fun sequence with a train and there's some fun moments.
There's just a lot of baggage with that movie.
You can also. Yeah.
But this has no baggage.
Any
this,
of these.
Cutthroat Island has like barely any baggage to even rag on, you know? Like,
yeah. Clean production.
Oh, but you know, I was about to say, like, Lone Ranger has like a kind of a bizarre, fucked up moment in a Disney movie where like someone's heart gets ripped out and eaten. We didn't mention this. I don't think we did. But in Cutthroat Island,
the
MacGuffins, the part of the three pieces of the map, is literally they scalp
the protagonist's dad.
Yeah, she has to scalp her dying father.
And then from then on, it's just
to get the map on his head that she just jokes carries.
Like, oh, is this like a pig skin? What is this?
Well, and the fact that
and it looks like a scalp, looks gross.
And she carries it around wrapped up right next to her pussy, and every time she takes it out, the it camera like, has to be like, look at her legs all spread.
It looks weird.
You think they like shave it at least, but it's like kind of hairy.
God,
it's gross.
I wasn't expecting that, and that happens really early in the movie. That the dad is like, you must scalp me.
She's the
best
part.
That's the best thing in the movie is the scalped map. We forgot
how
all
did
about
get
that.
It there.
So crazy. Like, someone tattooed. I think it's the top of the head that the map is on.
Man, if
so
she
we got
had
that
just had
tattooed.
An iPhone, she just could have taken a picture
well,
of it.
The crazy thing is this more or less the same thing is in Waterworld, which came out the same year. The map is like tattooed on her back. Thankfully, they don't like rip it off.
No one skins
anything,
anybody.
Nobody skins anybody. They didn't go that far.
I think they
far,
try
like,
to, don't they, in Waterworld? I think.
Well, there's like a threat that the villain's like, I'm going to just cut this off you. Yeah. Like, and that's good. Like, oh, shit, that's a threat. In this one, literally the dad is just like, just rip my scalp
just
off.
Do it. You can take my scalp.
And like, it's no big thing. And just the rest of the movie, it's
why
just
why couldn't
this
she
prop.
Have just like sat for a second and drew the map? Like, just take 5 minutes
because
and draw
it. Those people were
because
after
they'd
her. She was
already made that really detailed scalp prop.
But once she had the scalp, like she could still like, okay, I got the scalp. I have this horrific scalp. I can now, at my leisure, now that I'm back in my cabin.
Yeah, but
like,
it's also a piece of her dad.
Well, they were being pursued though. There was
no, but
like
I'm saying, Dave, I mean, like after that, like and once, scalp, the, once
can't get
she's got the scalp,
hold on to this disgusting.
Yeah, you don't have to keep the
scalp
forever, like. Photocopy, you know, draw the map.
It's just
from
really
the scalp.
Tough when your dad is murdered by his brothers, and then you have to shave his head while he dies so you can scalp him, and you miss him a lot. And
that's right. She would
really
have had
tough.
To have shaved his head, and then that—that's
his—that's his line in the movie. He's like, "Shave my head." She's like, "What?" And then it just cuts to another scene.
I just imagine the few people who are in the audience in 1995 watching this, who paid for a ticket, just looking at each other like. What are we watching?
Did he say shave my head?
Whose idea was this? Just the looking fuck? At each other in the theater? Anyway.
I just wanted to just to clarify. I looked up Waterworld, and it made money. It just didn't make a whole lot of money.
Yeah, it was perceived as a bomb.
Yeah,
right?
It was the most expensive movie ever made.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
funny, because growing up, it was always my... When I was a youth, that was my like thing. I remember my parents would always talk about is like their go-to biggest bomb. That,
well, it
you
would
know,
cost like $175 million, and it made about $264 million. So it was pretty big.
You also
hit.
Gotta figure like you know when they say what the budget of a movie is, they don't usually put like what it costs to market that.
Yeah,
movie.
Yeah,
so
which is huge.
You know,
it probably
you gotta imagine whatever they say the budget is. There's usually like a whole other piece on top of that. That's just
and
like,
you
gotta
think about like what the time they spent on it. Like if that represents like years of work, making even double your money isn't really that good.
Well, I remember maybe like in the. In the late 2000s, whatever, people were saying, like, in order for a movie to make its money back, like, it has to make, like, 3 or 4 times its budget or something crazy like that, in order to be viewed as a success mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah, at this point
which
in
is
time,
insane.
Which is nuts, yeah.
Yeah, when you consider, like, some of the big budget movies, like any Marvel movie probably costs, like, $200 million to make, even if it's not, like, you know, Thor or Iron Man or something like that,
right.
Even if it's something like Ant-Man, you know, that's like, a lower-tier character, it's like that costs $200 million, so it's like Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
it's pretty wild. I always this stuff's interesting. I always like seeing this stuff, and it's cool to now I've seen all those top five box office bombs. And what a treat. And this is one I just totally didn't forget. Remember.
All right, so I guess what we're saying here is maybe Cutthroat Island was as bad as its reputation suggested.
No shit, Dave.
But the next entry in Hot Dave's Fun Summer Film Fest will be better, I promise you.
Well, I've got something that may turn the festival around, but we'll have to follow a mystical map to find it.
What is it with you and maps anyway? That's the second time you brought up weird mystical maps.
It's the third. Jackie's the one who gave me the map to find Cutthroat Island.
Really? You're the reason we had to watch this crappy movie?
I didn't think he'd actually find it. The only reason I gave him that stupid map was because I was hoping he'd get killed by that giant spider.
Why did you want to kill Dave?
Do you guys have any idea how terrible that fucking chili smells?
Oh, Jackie, I'm not afraid of death. I mean, sure, getting eaten alive by Zoroth the giant spider would be pretty low on my list of ways to die, but I've died before in the show, and I'll probably die again. I mean, shit, how many times has Mike been killed and brought back? 9, 10 times?
Wait, what?
The point is, Hot Dave's Fun Summer Film Fest will live on. So why don't you tell us about this movie you have in mind and where we can find it?
Well, okay. It's called Aquamarine, and it's kind of like a Disney Channel original movie. It's about a pair of teenage girls who make friends with a mermaid who lives in a swimming pool.
Hmm. Okay. Splash was a big hit, and that was about a mermaid, so maybe there's something to this. So where can we find it?
Well, that's the thing. The map is hidden somewhere in plain sight.
What do you mean?
I only have a piece of the puzzle. But it says that the map will reveal itself when the hair atop the video man's melon has thinned to its farthest point.
Wait, what?
We're gonna need your scalp, Dave.
What? No, are you crazy?
If I can't kill you, then I'll at least make you suffer, you Chili Hawkins son of a bitch! Come here!
Jesus! I find myself being slashed at by a woman with a giant sword!
It's over, Morgan. You're planning to fight me with that little stick?
No, Uncle. With
bad dog.